UAB MedCast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB MedCast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
Xenotransplantation is the transplantation of living organs, tissues, or cells from one species to another and has been viewed as a potential solution to the existing shortage of human organs for transplantation. My guests today are Dr. Joseph Techter. He's a transplant surgeon at UAB Medicine, and Dr. David Cooper. He's a pioneering xenotransplantation researcher at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Dr. Cooper, I would like to start with you. Please explain a little bit about xenotransplantation and what is the evolution of it?
Well, obviously, the important point is that we're so short of deceased human organs for transplantation, it nowhere near meets the demand that we have of patients waiting for a transplant. And so for some years, several of us have been looking at the possibility of using pig organs. It's much more complicated than with human organs. The pig organ, if you treat it with the basic immunosuppressive therapy, if it's transplanted into a human, which has been done in the past, it's rejected within literally minutes. And so it's a much more complex rejection barrier to overcome. And we've been working on this for many years, and the way we've been dealing with it is to try to genetically modify the pig to make the pig tissues rather more like the human tissue, so that the rejection is very similar to of a human organ, which takes, if you don't give any treatment, takes a few days. And if you give treatment, obviously you can go months or years. And that, coupled with some new immunosuppressive drugs that are coming through, seems to have solved the problem. And we've now got pig kidneys functioning, life-supporting pig kidneys functioning in non-human primates for months or years even. And so we're beginning to feel that we're ready to begin a clinical trial of pig organ transplantation in patients who can't, for one reason or another, obtain a human organ.
So Dr. Techter, is the primary hindrance, as Dr. Cooper was speaking about, in the immunologic rejection or the xenograft rejection that can sometimes happen very quickly? So speak about some of the immunologic barriers to xenotransplantation, and what are you seeing?
Sure. So you and I, and all people, have antibodies in our bloodstream that bind to sugars on the surface of a pig cell. And so over the course of the last, I'd say 15 years, people have been started to create pigs where they get rid of that one, get rid of a single sugar, so that the antibodies that you and I have no longer bind to the surface of those pig cells. And so now we've got to a point where we've got a number of deletions, three sugars knocked out in the pigs. And so with three sugars knocked out, there is a good number of people that no longer have antibodies to the pigs. And so those people would be good candidates to start with to try and put kidneys, pig kidneys, into those people and then give them the same kind of immunosuppression you would use for a human-to-human transplant. But we think the barriers are the same. We just have to identify them. And then xenotransplantation, in particular genetic engineering, gives us the opportunity to alter the donor so that what was causing the problem is no longer present in the organ.
So, Dr. Cooper, what are some biologic barriers to xenotransplantation and the potential to introduce infections across species?
Well, continuing what Dr. Techter was saying, the key thing we believe is that if you have human antibody that binds to the pig organ, it sets off a whole cascade of events which will either cause very rapid rejection, or if that is overcome by genetic engineering, it can actually cause a slower rejection that may take months or so on. So the less antibody you bind to the pig cell, the much more likely is that you're going to have a long-term survival of that transplanted organ. So that's what we've been concentrating our attention on. There are several other things you can do to enhance that, but that is the key to the whole thing. When I say you can enhance it, one of the reasons why you have a lot of damage to the pig organ very quickly is through what's known as the complement cascade. And you can put into the pig a human complement regulatory protein, which actually protects it from that complement cascade. So you can add all these things. But the key thing is this antibody binding. You may say, why do we have these antibodies? Well, unfortunately, when we're infants, we develop antibodies against bacteria and viruses that colonize our bowel. And unfortunately, some of those express these same sugars that pig organs do. So we make these antibodies as a defense mechanism, but then when we're exposed to a pig organ, obviously they immediately look at this pig organ as a foreign attacker and destroy it very quickly. Now, you mentioned about the infection risks. We think the infection risk is very small, much smaller actually than it is with a human organ. Because a deceased human organ, you usually have a few hours to test the donor, whether he's carrying any serious infectious agents. Nearly always, people do carry infectious agents, which we can control after we put the organ into the patient, but they can be problematic. Whereas the pigs that we're going to breed will be housed under very clean, biosecure conditions, and we'll be able to test them over periods of weeks or months, and we will know whether they have any infectious organisms or not. If they have anything serious, obviously we won't use those pigs for the transplant. If they have minor things which we know we can deal with or are not going to be problematic, well, we obviously can go ahead. So I think eventually it will be much more safe for a patient to have a pig organ than it will to have a human organ. Now, the one proviso which people have been concerned about is that inside every pig cell are some virus particles. We have virus particles in our cells, and they don't seem to do us any harm. The pig particles don't do the pig any harm, but there's always been a little concern, will the pig virus particles do the human concern after you've transplanted the organ? And you can't get rid of those very easily because they're in every cell, so you're going to have to transplant them. There are techniques, genetic engineering techniques, where you can knock them out. You can knock all these virus particles out, but it's time-consuming, it's complicated, and we'd prefer not to do that if we can because it's going to delay things. And we firmly believe that it's not a significant or serious risk to the patient. There are drugs that will knock these prevent these viral particles from activating after the transplant if you needed to, but the evidence seems to be that they're really not going to cause much problem. So there are concerns about potential infections, but we think they're very relatively small, and we think they can be controlled.
Dr. Techter, what about ethical issues? Must preclinical data adequately support the possibility of a successful outcome? And in addition, for any ethically conducted trials, what about the risks to the patient and society? Must they be minimized? How does all of that work?
So I think it goes without saying that we're going to have preclinical data that justifies our trial. And we think that we probably have accrued that data already. As far as risks to the patient, transplantation, whether it's human to human or pig to human, is all about risk. And how do you mitigate that risk and how do you evaluate what the actual risk is? And so what I would say as far as an infectious risk, humans have had a very, very long exposure to pigs. And so one of the things that people who study pandemics tell us is that if we were going to see a big problem with the pig, we should have already seen it by now. So that's one thing that's quite decent. But we will have to monitor patients very carefully for the presence of any new viruses. And I think that a lot of that will be borne out by symptoms. But so far, we haven't seen that. In addition, I think we've made some pretty clear, and the FDA is pretty clear on their desire to have banking of samples from the person in their blood so that you can store it, look at it, and you know, take a very longitudinal view. But we would not be doing this if we thought it was if there was an enormous risk to the person. But you have to remember that there are more than 100,000 people waiting for kidney transplants right now. And today, if you are 60 years old and you get listed today, you have a greater than 50% chance of dying without ever getting a kidney transplant. So, you know, we're not talking about an optional therapy. This is a therapy where we're talking about people that are not getting helped. So that's how I would couch that.
Dr. Techter, sticking with you for a minute, in regards to that, do you have any information yet about your patient selection criteria?
We are working to put that together, but what we're trying to do is identify a specific group of people that is would clearly benefit from a kidney transplant, but are very, very unlikely to get one. And so right now, the groups that Dr. Cooper and myself and our group have started to hone in are people that are a little bit older. So if you're 60 years old, right now the wait in this state is between 5 and 8 years, and it's closer to 8 years. So that is a longer wait than you're going to do well on dialysis. So older people are certainly, or older recipients are certainly an initial target group. In addition, there are people that have antibodies to a lot of other humans and have a very hard time finding a suitable human donor. And so some of those people will have a favorable cross match with our pigs. And again, those would be people that we'd like to specifically target, because those are people that would do well if they got a transplant with a good cross match, but are extremely unlikely to get it if it's human.
And Dr. Cooper, what about the popular perception of xenotransplantation? As a pioneering researcher, you must have been hearing from people all of these years whenever you discuss what it is you do for a living. What do you see as the popular perception, and how do you explain it to people?
Well, I think the usual reaction is one of surprise, of course, because people are not really aware that this work has been going on for actually 30 years now. But I think most people see it as a real enormous potential, enormous opportunity in order to solve this problem of a limited number of donors for patients waiting for a transplant, as Dr. Techter mentioned. The other thing is, too, you can expand this into patients, for example, with diabetes. They can be cured of their diabetes if you put in pancreatic islet cells into them, but there are just too few human deceased donors to make that worthwhile. You can treat very, very few each year. Whereas with the pig islets, they will also provide enough insulin for the patient. And we're talking here of over 1 million patients in the United States alone with type 1 diabetes. So if you want to solve some of these other problems, not just organ transplantation, you're going to have to look at another source of cells and organs. And that, we think, would be the genetically engineered pig. So I think the potential is enormous, not just in organ transplantation, but in all sorts of other conditions. There's a group in Europe, for example, doing some very exciting work on treating Parkinson's disease with pig cells, and that's been quite encouraging results. So we're thinking of not just organ transplants, although that's our first priority, but there will be a lot of other things. And I think people, the average person in the street, realizes that potential. I think it's no different today from what it was 50, 60 years ago when organ transplantation first came in. People were a little bit askance and thought this was a bit odd, and transplanting from a dead person to a live person. And it took a while for people to actually come to terms with that. And I think it will be the same with xenotransplantation. But I actually think that people are more ready to accept xenotransplantation, and there have been a number of surveys of this, than they were 50 or 60 years ago to accept a human allotransplantation. So I think it's something that's acceptable to the majority.
And Dr. Cooper, sticking with you for a minute, tell us about the grant for this new xenotransplantation program.
Well, Dr. Techter knows more about the financial side than I do. When we came down from Pittsburgh, we brought a grant with us from the National Institutes of Health, which we'd been working on and still has a few years to go. And Dr. Techter brought a grant down from when he came from Indianapolis, he brought a grant down from the National Institutes of Health. So we got some fairly good funding there. But UAB has managed to get some philanthropic funding and has put some funding in themselves. So at the moment, we've got a reasonable amount of funding, but it's quite an expensive research program, of course, and so it takes quite a bit to keep it running. And I've said for the last 15, 20 years that if we had more funding, we could have progressed much further than we are even now. And so it will require a little bit more funding till we're absolutely ready to move into the clinic. I think once we do move into the clinic and have a handful of patients who do well after a pig kidney transplant, I think then the funding will increase, because I think industry and the pharmaceutical companies and the government as well will see that this has huge potential. And then there's always more funding if something really is obviously going to be successful.
And Dr. Techter, last word to you in summary. Please let other physicians know what you'd like them to know about xenotransplantation and what you're doing there at UAB. Tell us about your team, why they're so great to work with, and kind of summarize this fascinating topic for us.
Well, we have a comprehensive group so that we can engineer and create our own pigs from scratch. And that group has done a fantastic job. We have a lot of expertise with immunology and experience. And now with David's group joining, you know, we've got multiple organs and we've got the added experience and wisdom. So I think we're at a point now where we are getting ready to try this in a limited scale in people that are unlikely to get transplanted. And so we'd like people to be optimistic about it, and we'd like people to be open-minded about it.
Thank you, gentlemen, so much. And we certainly applaud all the great work that you're doing there at UAB Medicine. And a community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That's 1-800-822-6478. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physician. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.